Welcome to the College Admissions Process Podcast presented by Prep Expert. Prep Expert offers live online SAT and ACT courses with the best score guarantees, instructors, and curriculum. Go to prepexpert.com to guarantee your child's success. Welcome to The Cap, where we are here to speak with college reps and other professionals in the field of college admissions to help answer all your questions and guide you through every step of the process. So if you're serious about college admissions, you've come to the right place. Are you ready? Let's talk about it. And now, here's your host, Dr. John Durante. Welcome to The Cap, the College Admissions Process Podcast. I am your host, John Durante, and I am here to introduce you to college admissions representatives and other professionals in the field of college admissions. Our purpose is to serve you, the students and parents, so that you may gain insight straight from the people who ultimately make the decisions. Regardless of whether you apply to a particular school being highlighted in a given episode, you should listen to all of them, as each guest will give you tremendous insight and advice on every aspect of the college admissions process, prompting you to come up with your own follow-up questions for when you visit campus or meet with a college admissions representative yourself. Don't forget to visit our website, www.collegeadmissionstalk.com, or the show notes of each episode to access the alphabetical list of all the colleges available with the related audio link to the right of each school. The alphabetical list provides you with on-demand access to all of the episodes so that you may listen whenever you wish. And if you want to receive links to episodes before they are released on the podcast, along with other related resources, please fill out the email opt-in form also available on our website and in the show notes of each episode. Lastly, please email me with any questions or comments at collegeadmissionstalk@gmail.com. So are you ready? Let's talk about it. Welcome to The Cap, the College Admissions Process Podcast. I am your host, John Durante, and it gives me great pleasure to introduce to you today Matt McGann, who's the Dean of Admission and Financial Aid at Amherst College. Matt, thank you so much for being here. How are you doing today?
Oh, John, it's a real pleasure to be here with you today. Couldn't be happier to get to talk with you and your audience.
Well, we are so happy to have you. I have been trying to get Amherst on for quite a while, but finally I went right to the chief, and here we are, Matt. So looking forward to this one. So let's start, Matt, by asking, can you share what's new on campus at Amherst in terms of any exciting developments or even some of your upcoming projects?
Yeah, there's a lot that's happening now. You know, some of what you'll see on campus are the building and construction projects. The newest building on campus has been our brand new state-of-the-art science center to expand the opportunities for our students to do cutting-edge research. But actually, just this last year, we opened a new building in the humanities. I know there's been a lot of attention paid to science and technology these days, and we're on that cutting edge. But the humanities remain an important part of the liberal arts experience and of Amherst College. And so beautiful new building to house our humanities efforts, which is very exciting. Also this year, our students, for the first time, don't have to worry about the costs of textbooks. Textbooks are now included in our overall costs. So you register for class, you show up at the bookstore, you tell them your name, and there's your books. I know that students are worried about the cost of course materials, that is something that is another cost in this process. We want to take away those things that people worry about. We've been trying to do those kinds of things for a while. We're among the so-called no-loan schools because we also know that students are very worried about taking on debt for their education. So we're glad to not have to have that as part of our initial financial aid offer. So yeah, we're trying to both do a lot of things academically between sciences and humanities, but also to bring more equity and access, whether it's textbooks or loans or whatever else we can do.
Well, that's terrific. First of all, anytime that a school is doing a lot of building, as you mentioned, there's a new science center, humanities buildings, that's always a great sign that the future looks great. Now, you also mentioned the equity in education, and I appreciate you talked about two things. Number one,
textbooks are included. Not only is that great for students, but I'm sure that, Matt, that there's a lot of parents out there that are really happy to hear that. And you talked about being a no loan school. Can you just elaborate on that a little bit for people that might not understand exactly what that means?
Yeah. I know that there's a lot of talk in the press and among families going through the college process about how to make college affordable and how college can be financed. And there's a lot of concern about taking on significant debt for a college education and recognizing that an aversion to debt is a real obstacle for a lot of students that we think would be really great at a place like Amherst College. Back, it's about two decades old now. We've been in our financial aid packages, we've replaced where we used to say, hey, this is a good spot to maybe take a subsidized federal loan. We've replaced that with grant funding, scholarship money that does not have to be paid back. And what we found is that that has helped us to bring in more students from more different socioeconomic backgrounds who would really benefit from the Amherst College experience. I think it's been a good program to increase socioeconomic diversity on our campus and open the door a little bit more widely to deserving students who would really benefit from our education.
Well, I think that's terrific. Every little bit helps. And kudos to Amherst and your office for working on making that happen for all students. Now, ironically, you mentioned earlier your science center. So just this week, I received an email from Nicole, who's out of Virginia. So Nicole from Virginia writes, "My son is still a few years away from the application process, but I'm trying to learn about more colleges and universities that he might consider when he gets there and build upon my own familiarity with what some of his options will be in advance. One question I have regarding liberal arts colleges pertains to STEM majors. My son is currently interested in pursuing computer science, and while I know large state universities often have excellent computer science programs and resources, I feel he might be better suited to a setting that's more of a small, collaborative, residential-style college with smaller class sizes, such as Amherst." And she writes, "Is it possible for a computer science major to get a solid education in that field with access to internships and good job placement outcomes after graduation from a small liberal arts college?" What do you have to say to that, Matt?
Yeah, thanks, Nicole, for writing in with a question. I'm glad to be on today to help think about it. I think the liberal arts environment can be great for prospective computer science majors. Today at Amherst College, computer science is one of our five largest majors. We have a really terrific faculty who are really engaged with our students. Our faculty and students collaborate on lots of different areas of work. In computer science, artificial intelligence, big data, cryptography, among other kinds of things. And so it's a very popular major and certainly growing. On the career side, our career center, I think, is one of the great career centers. One of the interesting approaches that we take now is that in our career center, we have specialists. People who are liaisons to particular industries. So we have folks who work a lot with show business and Hollywood and Broadway. We have folks who work a lot with the publishing industry and journalism, folks who work with politics and nonprofits. And yeah, we have someone who works specifically with science and technology, helping students to connect with internships and ultimately to find fulfilling careers after Amherst. Among the top 10 employers of Amherst students in this last year were both Microsoft and Amazon. I think this is proof that at liberal arts colleges, you can get a really great education in computer science, have really great outcomes. And Nicole, as you pointed out in your question, there are some differences between research universities and liberal arts colleges. And I think the most important thing is for students to know themselves and to find that right fit. And for some students, that more intimate environment, the collaborative environment of the small classes that you'll find at a liberal arts college can be really perfect.
Well, we really appreciate that. Thanks again, Nicole from Virginia, for reaching out. You talk about computer science being one out of five of your largest majors. There is a lot of faculty and student collaboration, along with great work in AI, just to mention a few of the topics that you covered. You also have a career center where you talked about your specialists. Now, the specialists are liaisons to particular industries. So Amherst is there not only to accept you as a student, not only to support you during your 4 years plus as a student there, but also to set you up for careers. And I say that because, Matt, I read that your retention rate is an amazing 97%, not only well above the national average, but one of the highest in the country. And retention rates, of course, means the percentage of students that return after freshman year. So, Matt, what is it about your community at Amherst, your academic and extracurricular offerings, that makes students want to return each year? And are there any programs in particular that Amherst offers to help students with that transition from high school to your campus?
Yeah, I think it starts with really caring professors and also a really caring and strong community. On the academic side, we are, you know, we're a small residential undergraduate only liberal arts college. Our 1,900 students come here because they love to learn. They love our tight knit community, and we prioritize teaching. And because we prioritize teaching, all of our classes are small. The student to faculty ratio is 7 to 1. And because we're undergraduate only, all of the classes are taught by professors rather than, say, graduate student teaching assistants. And I think that this makes for an environment where students and faculty are really engaged, small classes, professors know your name. If you're not showing up for class, they're going to recognize that you're not there and they're going to check in with you. Also in the classroom, one more factor that makes, I think, the education really engaging for students is the structure of our curriculum. So we have what's called an open curriculum. So there are not formal required core classes or a distribution requirement. What's required to graduate from Amherst is to take and pass 32 classes. That's 4 classes each semester times 8 semesters. Within that, you have to take a first-year seminar, one of 34 different first-year seminars. You have to fulfill the requirements of at least one major, although about half of our students do 2 or sometimes 3 majors. Take the classes that most speak to you. That's what an open curriculum is. So in the classroom, what that means is that everyone else in a classroom with you in that small class taught by a professor has chosen to be there. They're excited to learn the material. They're excited to talk about what the topic of the day is rather than it just being another class that they have to take. So because Amherst students have to take this substantial responsibility for their education, they're the architects of their own education, I think this really makes students more engaged with what's happening. The other piece of this is the strong community. So our students essentially all live on campus. Housing is guaranteed for all 4 years. And with only a few exceptions, students are living on campus for all 4 years. Our first year students, thinking about first year retention, they are not just metaphorically at the center of what we do, but literally at the center of what we do. If you come to visit Amherst on our lovely hilltop campus in a college town here in Amherst, Massachusetts, New England, you'll see on the main green, the main quad, there are 7 historic residence halls lining this quad. And those are the residences where our first year students all reside together. They live together. They get a lot of support together. They have a lot of bonding. And yeah, they want to come back and be with each other for the next 4 years. So we literally put them at the center of what we do, support them inside the classroom, outside the classroom. And I think this has been really helpful for us as we seek to build a strong community for 4 years and then a strong alumni connection for a lifetime after that.
Well, I really appreciate you talking about your open curriculum, and I know that that definitely contributes to that 97% retention rate, because students, first of all, with that open curriculum are taking courses that, as you put it, most speak to you. Everyone has chosen that class because they want to be there. In addition to that, supportive professors, caring community, housing is guaranteed for 4 years. And I mention all of these pieces because I'm hoping that students and parents are listening, because these are great questions to ask when you're researching colleges in terms of, is housing guaranteed? Is it guaranteed for 4 years? By the way, 7-to-1 student faculty ratio, which adds to that amazing community. But it's also a good question for students and parents to ask, not only what the ratio is, but how does it change over 4 years? So these are all great pieces of insight. And I love that your small community, 1,900 students, which leads me to my next question, Matt. What's your institutional priority in terms of the number of freshmen you are looking to admit each year as an incoming class? And how many overall applications do you receive to fulfill that number?
Yeah, we're an intentionally small community. We want to have a small, close-knit community. So those 7 residence halls right on the main quad that I mentioned earlier, in those buildings, there are 473 beds for first-year students. Hmm. So that's our goal each year, is to identify 473 students that we think really align well with the mission and values of Amherst College. And so that's our goal. So from there, we just kind of work backwards. So based on kind of some math and things, we step back and admit about 1,200 students each year. And those 1,200 come from our total number of applications, which this year was around 14,000 students. So we had about a 9% admission rate this year. It's not that we like turning away lots of students. It's that, you know, at the end of the day, it's about identifying 473 students to come and join our community.
Well, I appreciate that insight. So again, the institutional goal in terms of that incoming freshman class is approximately 473 students. You admit 1,200 to get that yield. Total applications, 14,000, which again, as you mentioned, it's a 9% acceptance rate. I mention all of that because sometimes students apply and they get rejected and they think, okay, was it my essay? Was it that grade in freshman year, right? So immediately we take it very personally. And so I'm glad that you mentioned those numbers because, again, freshman class of 473, 14,000 applications, you know what your yield is, so you're going to admit somewhere around 1,200. So students, there are things that you control, which of course is put your best foot forward in your overall application, knowing that in your marketing package, each piece, what does it mean? What is the intent? How do you build from one piece to the next? But at the end of the day, they're all institutional goals. As Matt said here, they are intentional about keeping a small population in that really tight-knit community. So I really appreciate that, Matt. And something else that students and parents are very interested in, of course, is the application review process. So could you explain your holistic review and what specific attributes or experiences the admissions team looks for when reviewing those applications?
Yeah, that's exactly right, that it's a holistic review is our process. So it's not an algorithmic process where we're just looking at a GPA and an SAT score, that really we're trying to find those students that align with the mission and the values of the college. Our admission team is really proud of the whole person admission review that we can do each year. So it starts with an application, maybe the Common Application or the Coalition Score application or the QuestBridge application. And when we review these applications, the primary consideration is the fit with Amherst's mission and values. And we've talked about some of that already. We've talked about Amherst being a liberal arts college, and we are looking for those students who have a love for the fields in the liberal arts, whether it's math and science, the social sciences, humanities, arts. Because our learning environment is really an engaged learning environment. We're looking for students that have been really engaged with their learning up to this point already. We have these small classes, we have this open curriculum. And so we'll be looking out for engagement with learning in lots of places. Might come through in letters of recommendation from your teachers. So that'll be a part of the application package. Or we might see that in the way that you select your courses each year at your school, or in what you're doing co-curricularly or extracurricularly. These are all some clues for us about your engagement with learning. Also, we talked about the strong community on campus, that we're an active residential campus. And so we're very interested also in how you've engaged with your community up until now. We hope to find those students that will continue to be engaged and involved. So we'll be thinking about that. We also want to put all of this into proper context. We know that different students, different schools, different families, different neighborhoods have different opportunities, have different challenges. So we're always trying to put everything that we learn about you in the context of your environment. And that's a really important part of the holistic admission review. I would say at the end of the day that academics are paramount in the Amherst College admission process. If there's anything that's foundational, it would be having strong grades in a challenging curriculum in the context of your school's offerings. So that's where it starts. But maybe I'll also close this answer by noting just a couple things that are not a part of our admission process. So one is what's often called demonstrated interest, the idea that we might love you more if you show us more love. You go to our website all the time. You open up all our emails and click all the links and send me an email. Like that's not going to give you bonus points in the Amherst College admission process. Whether you're just finding out about the liberal arts, just finding out about Amherst College, or you've had a lifelong affinity for the place, all of those students will be put on the same playing field. And the second thing that we won't consider is how much can you pay? How much financial aid do you need? We're very fortunate to have 200 plus years of the Amherst community giving back to make the Amherst education affordable for all. So we're able to do an admission process that's what's referred to as need blind. Which for us means that needing financial aid is not going to be something that works against you in our financial aid process. And indeed, most of our students receive need-based financial aid, and we're glad to run an admission process where it's primarily for us, we can focus on academics, on mission, on values, and not so much on some of these other things.
Well, we appreciate that. You're looking clearly for students who fit with Amherst mission and values. And I think it's very important to repeat that, students, because they're looking for students who have a demonstrated love in the liberal arts, which is clearly what Amherst is, a liberal arts college, but also students who have been engaged in their learning throughout high school, as Matt said, based on the context of what's available. So looking at, for example, your school profile, what is available to you? What did you select over your 4 years of high school? And frankly, how did you perform? And by the way, we talked about a lot of things, including that amazing Amherst community. What have you done in high school as a community member? In addition to your academics, what have you done as a community member that shows that you're in line, that you fit with the Amherst missions and values? Anything else you want to add to that, Matt?
I think some of this may come up as we keep going through, but you know, holistic admission means that we're going to spend time on your application. We're going to try to be really thoughtful. We know that you put a lot of effort into the application, and we're going to try to give that respect to the work that you put in to showcase your best self as we try to make some hard decisions about who we think might fit best into the community that we're building.
Well, we appreciate that. And also the fact that you mentioned that you're not tracking demonstrated interest, and you're also not looking in terms of whether a student can pay or not. So you are need blind, which, you know, I really appreciate you sharing that as well. So Matt, has Amherst made any changes to its standardized testing policies? And how do you currently weigh SAT or ACT scores in the application process?
Yeah, so Amherst College is a test optional campus. Test scores, if submitted, can be one of many things that can help us to understand kind of the academic foundations of a student's application. But we have lots of ways of assessing that. We've kind of touched on some of the ways that we hear about academics, not only through the transcript and teacher recommendations that can provide us a lot of insight, and a variety of other ways. So we are truly optional in our approach to this. And I can share some numbers too, that this year, 60% of our enrolling class provided test scores with their application. 40% did not. Among all applicants, it was about 46% provided test scores with their application, and the other 54% did not.
Well, we appreciate you sharing those numbers and, of course, the fact that you are test optional. Matt, have you seen any recent trends in students' personal statements and essays that stood out? And can you share some tips for crafting a compelling narrative?
Yeah, I know that this can be one of the most daunting parts of the college application process. A lot of the other parts of what you have to fill in on an application, you don't have much choice. They might ask you, who are your parents? What school do you go to? What activities were you involved with over the last 4 years? What classes did you take? You can't go back in time and change that. But then you get to this part of the application where it's, you can put any 500 words that you want. And this is the point where, okay, I actually have some control here. And I think there's a lot of anxiety about that. And there's a lot of lore and mythology around the college essay. A lot of folks put a lot of pressure on themselves to have to come up with something really heroic. I've cured cancer. if you have, that's great.
That would be
a great service to the world. But that's not what we're expecting. In fact, I would say that the essays that we've been seeing that I think often are the most helpful are those that some outsiders might consider boring. In that, there's nothing flashy happening. It's just an essay that gives us some insight into you. And that's really what I hope, is that this is something that's true to you. Sometimes a piece of advice I'll give for students is, if you had a printed out copy of your essay and it didn't have your name on it, and it was just left in the hallways of the school, and your best friend picked it up, or your favorite teacher picked it up without your name and just read it, that they would know it's you. That's, I think, a great essay. Not an essay where you pick it up and you're clearly trying to be someone else because it's someone that you think that admission officers want to see. And I think that that's the wrong approach here. I think you want to be true to yourself. You don't have to have already done these amazing things. Who you are is enough. And I hope that we get to learn about you. And it's one of the real treats of being an admission officer is to read your stories.
Well, I really appreciate that you said you are enough. I think that's terrific. And again, it adds to that amazing community feel that Amherst fosters. And speaking of community, Matt, how do you evaluate extracurricular activities and leadership roles in the overall application? And has this aspect become more or less significant in recent years?
Yeah, I'd say it's something we've always considered as we look to build this strong community that is so important to us. And so we will look to consider an applicant's positive impact and influence within the context of their environment. It's not about how many clubs you're a part of, how many things you're the president of, or what things you founded. This idea of positive influence, it can be seen in many ways. It can be seen in an after-school job, in a faith community, with the ways you spend time with your family and the family responsibilities you may have. So it doesn't have to be just these formal organizations in school that have officer positions, anything where you're contributing to a community and it's meaningful to you, we hope to hear about all of those things. And that is something that we'll certainly consider as we look to build our community here at Amherst.
Well, I appreciate you talking about not only the school activities, but all of the outside activities. And I love what you just said. Anything where you are contributing, where you're adding to that community, is something that the admissions reps want to hear about. And by the way, if you don't include the fact that you have a job, students, you're leaving it up to the admissions rep to speculate as to why perhaps you're not in so many after-school activities. So it's very important to include jobs, caring for a younger sibling, caring for an elderly relative, whatever it is, include it to give people like Matt the best insight in terms of who you are. So Matt, you mentioned it a little bit earlier in terms of the teacher letters of recommendation. What makes a great letter of recommendation? What makes it impactful? And have there been any notable examples recently that made a difference in an applicant's evaluation?
Yeah, I think the letters frequently make a difference. Part of that is that, I see a lot of students who are very humble, don't toot their own horns, or maybe don't even fully recognize just how great they are. And it can take a third person observer, someone who sees them in the classroom day in and day out, to really showcase what makes this person special. And what makes a lot of people special is not something that can just be seen in the grade on the transcript. It can be in the ways that students interact with each other. Like, you know, when you're doing a group project, what's your role? How do you contribute to that? I love learning about that through letters of recommendation. Or when you're sitting in class, what's that moment where you go from sitting back in your chair to almost leaping out of your chair? What are those times where you're so excited about the material? I love when teachers tell me about those moments. Or, you know, what do they see when they're walking the halls and you're by your locker with your friends, where, you know, you're with younger students? Are you the one pushing them around, or are you the one putting your arm around them and helping them out? These are things that, you know, are real things that we learn from letters of recommendation from teachers. So it's not just about getting a letter from the teacher who gave you the best grade, or the teacher who teaches the subject that you want to major in, but someone that you've developed a relationship where they've seen you at your best, where you've had the opportunity to showcase the ways that you are as a person and as a learner. And, you know, sometimes those are teachers that also see you in other contexts. You know, the English teacher who's also the advisor for the newspaper at the school that you work on, or the biology teacher who's also your cross-country coach. A lot of those kinds of letters can be really quite helpful as well, because we can see more of you. Your teachers are some of your biggest fans, and it can really add a lot to the application. It's one of my favorite parts of reading an admission application as an admission officer.
This is your host, John Durante, and it gives me great pleasure to welcome back Sean Patel, who's the founder and CEO of Prep Expert. Sean, welcome back.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me. And I'm so excited to announce that Prep Expert is the official title sponsor of the College Admissions Process Podcast. This has been a partnership in the works for a while now, and I'm so glad we got it off the ground. We're so excited to work with families, parents, students of the College Admissions Process Podcast at Prep Expert to help them through our live online SAT and ACT courses, not only improve their SAT and ACT scores, but help them get into college as well as win hundreds of thousands of dollars in college scholarships. Thank you so much for the partnership, and we are so excited to work with your families.
Thank you, Sean. And to learn more about how Prep Expert can support your child's academic journey, visit prepexpert.com today, and best wishes to all. Well, like every question prior, you gave tremendous insight. And I know that there's a lot of teachers and also school counselors that listen. And I think the bottom line is what you talked about. talk about the moments when writing that letter, whether it's in class, whether it's something that you observe teachers and school counselors in the hallway. Because if you're going to spend the majority of your letter of recommendation talking about something that's easily found on the transcript or something that's easily found on the activity sheet, it really is a missed opportunity, as it doesn't really add too much more to the overall application. So again, that's great insight. And Matt, what are the different ways for a student to apply to Amherst? And I'm talking, for example, early decision, early action, or regular decision. And is there a benefit to applying one way over the other?
Yeah, so I'll start with the last part, was that especially in terms of things like financial aid, our approach to financial aid is not going to change from the first student we admit, QuestBridge, mm-hmm. early decision, all the way until the last student we take off of the wait list. For every student, regardless of citizenship status, regardless of application, timing, or mechanism, we have a need-blind admission process. We meet each student's full calculated need. Students can apply through one of three applications: the Common Application, the Coalition Score application, and the QuestBridge application. And they can apply for one of essentially three deadlines. So QuestBridge National College Match has its own process with a deadline in September. We have an early decision offering with a deadline in early November. And we have a regular decision offering with a deadline in early January. And we seek to find those students whenever they might apply and whichever application they might use. We don't want that to be the thing that matters. What we want is to center the student and try to find those students that will really be a great member of that 473-person first-year class.
Well, that's terrific. And what about looking ahead, Matt? What are some of Amherst's strategic goals or visions for the next 5 to 10 years? And how might these influence the university's appeal to prospective students?
Yeah, I'll talk about a couple projects that we've got underway and then kind of a philosophical goal that we have as well. So we've got two new building projects on campus. So one is going towards that strong community that we've been talking about. We want to make it even stronger. We're going to do that through a new student center and dining commons, especially in this world where so much is happening online, through our phones and computers. We want to make an investment in people being together in person. And to find and make those spaces where people can sit together, talk together, eat together, and really build community. So we've taken a spot on our hillside overlooking the mountains. It's a beautiful site where we're really looking forward to students coming to that place and building community together. The other thing is less visible than a building. It's actually mostly underground. We are seeking to move off of fossil fuels and to become a carbon neutral campus within the next few years. So there's a lot of infrastructure parts of that project. It's not as exciting as a new science building or a new student center in some ways, but I think it speaks to our mission. And I think it speaks to the kinds of students that are attracted to places like Amherst. They see the big problems of the world. They know that our climate, our environment are really important. And to be at a place that believes deeply in trying to have an impact to make this planet better, we're trying to do that through our climate project. The other thing I want to mention is we have a president who's relatively new. Michael Elliott is in just completed his second year. And one of his big goals is he wants to think deeply about civic engagement, about serving the greater good. I think this traditionally has been something that colleges have played an important role in, and he wants to renew that idea at Amherst College. I'll give you a couple examples of the kinds of things that are happening. So our Career Center is launching a new program called Interns for Democracy. It's going to support paid summer internships where students go work in democracy-oriented organizations. We're excited to promote not just big company kinds of internships, but also these kinds of internships that really support our democratic society. Also fellowships supporting graduates who are serving the greater good, looking to have our graduates increasingly, hopefully, choose some of those professions in addition to the big companies that they also work for. This is an important time for our country. I want to see our country come together, and I'm glad that Amherst is trying to find a variety of ways to increase civic engagement to more serve the greater good.
Well, Amherst is definitely finding a variety of ways, not only to increase the civic engagement, but it's everything that you do. You talked about the new student center and dining commons, and I love how you talked about being mindful of the fact that even though you have a 97% retention rate, which speaks so much about your community, you're still very mindful, right? You're not going to remain stagnant. You're going to continue to cultivate that community, which has really come through in this conversation. I love how you talk about the carbon neutral campus, that climate project, your new president's mission, which of course is civic engagement, which amongst many things offers so many different internship and fellowship opportunities, which I just think is phenomenal. It really does sound like you have something for everyone, Matt, which leads me to the next question. For students that may have had an IEP plan or a 504 while in high school, what resources does Amherst offer to help ensure that they continue to be supported and successful once they're on your campus?
Yeah, I think the first stop for a lot of these students would be with the wonderful folks in Student Accessibility Services in that office. They work with students to provide appropriate accommodations based on each individual student's needs. Could be extended time on exams, note-taking services, accommodations and housing, assistive technology we talk a lot about as well and provide a lot of that. So that's often a first place, and that is a home for a lot of our students who have the needs. But we also want to take kind of a universal design approach to this to the degree that we can to make our education more equitably accessible regardless of students' circumstances and needs. So for all students, we have a strategic learning center, a place where you can go to better think about studying strategies, about better taking notes. You know, a lot of our students, you know, they've had not so hard a time in high school. They've gotten good grades. And, you know, it may be that for the first time in college, they're finally realizing, well, I can't just rely on just my natural smarts or whatever. Like, I got to really buckle down here and like actually have a strategy around what does it mean to take effective notes? What does it mean to do effective studying? We also have a writing center. And we believe all students can become better writers. And so this is not a remedial thing. This is for every student. We want them to be the best communicator they can be. So we're going to provide that service to all students. We also have a quantitative center where students can also become more confident in their learning in the quantitative disciplines. And we offer for all of our students a comprehensive counseling and mental health services center. This is a place that offers a range of mental health services, individual counseling, group therapy, workshops. So trying to offer a lot of things for all students and designing courses and designing an education where we hope that all students can be successful and not assuming anything about what they already bring, what they might need. So trying to think comprehensively about this is our approach.
Well, I love that answer. Number one, you talked about your student accessibility services, which of course, those are for students that might need extended time, help with note-taking, housing, assistive technologies, and so much more. But I'm not surprised that you pointed to your universal design approach, which means regardless of whether a student had an IEP or a 504 plan, you have something for everyone, which includes study strategies, better note-taking, you have a writing center, you have a quantitative center. And I really appreciate the fact that you talked about counseling and mental health services as has become ever more important in every single society. So I really appreciate that comprehensive answer. And this has been, Matt, an amazing conversation. Before I get to the last question, I just have to ask, is there a question that I didn't ask today or a topic that I simply didn't bring up that you'd like to share with us now?
Oh, there's so much to tell about Amherst College. I would be remiss if I didn't talk at least a little bit about our part of Western Massachusetts and the college-rich area that we are. So Amherst is part of a consortium of five colleges and universities in Western Massachusetts called the Five College Consortium. It includes, in addition to Amherst College, just to the north of us, the University of Massachusetts, which is the flagship state university in Massachusetts, very large comprehensive research university. Just to the south of us is Hampshire College, a progressive small institution founded out of the counterculture movements of the 60s and 70s. Just to the south of that is the oldest women's college in the United States, Mount Holyoke. And then just on the other side of the Connecticut River from us is the largest women's college in the country, Smith College. And these five colleges share resources. There's cross-registration between the five schools. So not only do Amherst students have access to the 850 courses each year at Amherst, but also to the thousands of courses throughout the consortium. They have access to the libraries and the dining halls and student groups and events. And it makes a small college of 1,900 students part of a larger environment. Amherst, Massachusetts, and its surrounding areas, it's a great college town kind of area, very vibrant, you know, bookstores and bubble tea shops and student-priced restaurants of all different cuisines of the world. It's a really great place. The other thing I probably, that I'd like to talk about, I think when we talk about college, college is more fun when you've got a rival. You think about Michigan and Ohio State, Harvard and Yale, Stanford and Cal. Well, at Amherst, we've got the biggest little game in the country. You can find its Wikipedia page for more than 100 years. Amherst and Williams College have had a fierce rivalry. The Amherst-Williams football game each fall is one of the most remarkable events that I get a chance to go to. The alumni and community of all of the schools come out and just have a great time. And we have our friendly competitions and other things. And it's always the rivalry is something that's great fun. I will say something nice about them here. You know, if you're liking a lot of what you're hearing about Amherst College, small residential environment, places like Williams College also are great places to check out. There's something they call the Little Three, kind of like Harvard, Yale, and Princeton are the Big Three. Amherst, Williams, and Wesleyan are the Little Three. We're part of a consortium of other liberal arts colleges called the Six College Consortium. I hope you'll check out these colleges if you like the kinds of things you're hearing about Amherst. I think the liberal arts, it's this particularly American style of education. It's something we do better in this country, better than the rest of the world. I think it's really special and really meaningful. And I hope that many of your listeners will go. There's a lot of liberal arts colleges on the list of places you've talked to. Check all those schools out too. The liberal arts matters. And Amherst, you know, I think we matter a little bit more than Williams, but only a little bit.
Well, we appreciate you talking about the Amherst-Williams rivalry and the friendly competition, along with the consortium that you're a part of. That's great insight. Talking also about your liberal arts education, we really appreciate it. And unfortunately, Matt, it does lead us to that last question, which is, what are your top three pieces of advice that you provide students and their families going through the college admissions process?
Well, yeah, and I love to be able to provide advice to students. We talk about ourselves as admission counselors often, and we love to do the counseling part of this. So a few things. One thing I like to tell students is if they want to go to college, I think they're going to be able to go to college. I know there's a lot of anxiety about the application and the small admit rates and, you know, early versus regular and the common application. But, you know, for seniors listening right now, I'd say at this time next year, more likely than not, you're going to be at a college that makes you very happy. Now, I don't know where that is. I don't know which place it's going to be. You know, there's going to be a little journey between now and then, but I'm confident you're going to be at a place that's going to make you fabulously happy. That's going to be a great fit for you. So even as you may be feeling this anxiety, know that at the other end of this, you're going to have a place, you're going to get a great education, and it's going to be worth this process for you. So that's number one. Second thing, I think the college process is a great opportunity to do some self-discovery. I know that when people kick off this process, a lot of the time, the first instinct is like, all right, I got to start making a list of colleges. But I think before you get to that point, thinking about taking the time to get to know yourself. You know, how do you see yourself in the future? What are your goals? What motivates you? How do you learn best? What kind of learning environment? What kind of teachers help you learn the most? What gets you excited? Who inspires you? Answering these kinds of questions, I think, can help you to find that right college match. So before diving in, take that time for some self-reflection. Finally, and we could go on all day here, I know there's no standardized test to measure it, but I'd say your character matters. So there's no 800-point test or 5-point whatever. It can sometimes feel like it's all a numbers game. But in life, and hopefully to some degree in this college admission process, I think your character really matters. And I hope you'll keep that in mind. I hope that you'll continue being a good member of your community, loving your family, showing appreciation for your teachers, and that matters too. So yes, GPAs, SATs, whatever, your character is at the center of this. And I hope you can find ways to center that as you go through this.
Well, Matt, as expected, a very thorough and thoughtful answer. Number one, students, I have to repeat, if you want to go to college, you're going to college. There are over 4,000 colleges and universities in the United States alone. There are more, much more than just 1, 2, 10, 20, 100 schools that will fit your needs, but not every school is the right fit for you, right? So that brings me to Matt's point number two. Take the time to self-discover during this process. Before creating the list, as Matt put it, ask yourself who you are and really reflect on what it is that you want for yourself. And number three, perhaps even more important, character matters. It absolutely does matter. So Matt, no surprise at all. This was awesome. You're amazing. Amherst obviously is so lucky to have you, as were we on this podcast episode. I hope to have you back again, Matt. Thank you so much for everything today.
Thank you, John. Thank you, listeners. It's been a pleasure.
Terrific. The pleasure has been all ours. And to everyone out there, one last thing to say, good luck with the college search. Take care all, and best wishes.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of The CAP, the College Admissions Process Podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, please don't forget to tell a friend and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and wherever you listen to your podcasts. I am your host, John Durante, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode of The CAP.
Hey, podcast friends, if you've been enjoying the College Admissions Process Podcast, I'm excited to share my new book, Straight from the Admissions Office, Insider Strategies for College Applications. It's packed with insights and tips from over 250 podcast episodes with admissions professionals designed to make the college process less overwhelming. Whether you're a student, parent, or college counselor, it's a valuable resource for navigating the admissions process. By grabbing a copy, you're also helping to support the podcast. The links are in the show notes. Thank you, and best wishes to all with the college admissions process.